And good morning to everyone. Couple of business notes here before we get started. First of all, we welcome to the court today for the first time Justice Jonathan Papik, who's down on the right side of the bench, and down on the far left side of the bench is Judge Rachel Daugherty, District Court Judge from out in Aurora, and she is sitting with the court today, so we greatly appreciate that. I should also note that I have a time conflict with the last couple of cases of the day. I will be participating on those cases on the briefs, but Justice Miller Lerman will be presiding on those particular cases. With that in mind, our first case of the day is Mays versus Midnight Dreams, Inc. Mr. Krieger, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. My name is Bob Krieger. I represent Midnight Dreams and Dan Robinson. Facts of this case relevant to my discussion are as follows. Plaintiff Elizabeth Mays is an exotic dancer. Mr. Robinson owns a business called Midnight Dreams. Midnight Dreams does business as Shakers. Shakers is an unusual business. It's a juice bar, but it doesn't sell juice. It has a business model in which it provides a venue for people who want to pay an entrance fee to watch fully nude exotic dancers. It doesn't serve food, doesn't have alcohol, largely a building. The question for the court today is the relationship between those dancers and Midnight Dreams and or Mr. Robinson. Just a note, the concept of gratuities or tips in this case are used interchangeably. It's not really material to the legal discussion, but Ms. Mays works for gratuities. We normally consider tips to be in addition to a bill of fare or for services rendered. Here, there is really no food service, no alcohol service, nothing for a tip to be added to, but what the dancers do get is payment directly from the customers who pay their entrance fee. We'll just refer to them as gratuities.
If she receives gratuities, does that change if she becomes an employee,
hourly wage
she receives?
No, Your Honor. Honestly, the question is much more simple than that. And even I find myself getting drawn into this discussion of employment contracts, independent contractor agreements that are interpreted by law to be employment contracts. See, in my view, none of that is relevant to the discussion before this court today. That is the plaintiff's argument. The plaintiff's argument is manifest essentially by the argument it makes in its very first argument that this lease agreement is transformed into an independent contractor lease employment agreement, and that's the issue that I want to talk
about.
So
you're at the higher level, the 50,000 foot view versus...
We are at the question of how can a lease agreement be an employment contract and or an independent contractor agreement, and it is accomplished by exactly what the plaintiff says. You transform this lease agreement in which it has no trappings of an employment contract into some other contract. And that's the argument that I'm advancing.
And what are the hallmarks of it that make it a lease or a conventional lease we grew up with?
Because it says that's what it is.
But
it
other said, than the title, what are the contents of it that remind you of a lease?
The dancer pays the establishment to use the facility.
Does the dancer have to schedule appearances?
Only if they want to. They have to tell the proprietor that they want to be there at a certain time because it can't be a free-for-all. All of the dancers, if you will, have the same arrangement with the property owner. Now understand, the property owner doesn't get any money from any other source except from the door that the gentleman, if you will, pay to go see the dancers and from what the dancers pay him to manage the facility.
So also food and drink.
No, well, there's no real food. There's like a snack bar and you can get a free Pepsi or something with your...
There's a bartender, isn't there?
For soda or soft drinks that the customers can purchase from the bar.
So they do sell food and drink? A little bit.
They sell things you can eat and things you can drink.
Which is food and drink.
All right, but not...
I don't know.
It makes a difference in terms of the model, all right? And I'm getting... I don't have limited time, but I'd like to bring this back to your question a different way.
So your argument is this is like you could rent this for wedding receptions or...
There is no doubt, and I have to concede, that if you're a new dancer and you're looking for a building to dance in, and that's what you do in front of men who pay you money, it sounds like a strip club to me. All right. The question isn't whether this is a strip club or they could rent the hall for wedding receptions. The question is, and the evidence in this case was undisputed, that both Mr. Robinson and Ms. Mays said there was no circumstances under which she would work there as a paid employee. Not for minimum wage, not for anything. And Mr. Robinson made it quite clear that nobody wants to do that. That she made $44 an hour traveling from Wisconsin under this arrangement in which she paid the facility to use it.
What's the doctrinal significance of the amount of money that she made? Your brief talks a lot about $44 an hour, but how does that fit into the question before?
The state and federal wage and hour laws are addressed at a problem in society with the underpayment of people for services performed. And to try to hide behind independent contractor agreements, try to hide behind legal niceties and say, hey, that's your problem if you're not making minimum wage. The public policy for the minimum wage law and overtime law are set forth in the statute. If an employee, all right, says, I don't want to work for minimum wage. I want a different arrangement in which I can control how much I make. I can control whether I even go there at all. Remember, she lives in Wisconsin. She can enter into a contract that says, I don't want a minimum wage.
Are all the rules that are evident in the record, that was that a arm's length deal?
There is really a dispute in the record, and I get that those disputes and facts favor the plaintiff in this case, but let me just make the following observation. There were no rules established as part of the lease agreement. There were posters, Mr. Robbins said, some were left over from decades ago up in rooms when there were employees. I'll give the plaintiff that there were house rules, but let me suggest to you, Your Honor, that makes it similar to a strip club employment contract, but similar in the way dogs are similar to cats. They both have four legs, fur, tails, two ears, two eyes, and a cold, wet, black nose. But in the end, dogs bark and cats meow. This has the trappings of a strip club, but none of the financial relations that you normally see in that kind of environment. So to answer your question, wage and hour laws have nothing to do with how Ms. Mays decides to structure her arrangement with Midnight Dreams to make $40 an hour.
Is your claim there was never any jurisdiction here over fair labor issues?
I think the plaintiff had a chance to make her case. There's no jury trial here. We went through summary judgment. The record is replete with this argument that you can't call a lease under any legal artifice an employment contract. And you can try to call a cat a dog, but it simply isn't. In the end, Ms. Mays determined whether she did this at all. And I point out that making $44 an hour, which is what she really made, tells you why she entered into the lease agreement. It was in her interest to do so. So now the question is, can she use...
Does that relate to your estoppel argument?
It relates basically to the notion that I don't know why we're here talking about whether she was an employee or not. She did not establish under the lease agreement that she was an employee, and the question for the court is actually what she says in her first argument. Mays was transformed into an employee.
Would you agree that independent contractor agreements can be transformed into employment agreements?
Yes, because in that circumstance, Your Honor, the employer is paying the independent contractor.
So can you articulate any difference between this and an independent contractor agreement other than the fact that Ms. Mays made payments to your client?
Well, that seems to me to be a pretty significant distinction. We're not paying her anything.
But that's the distinction you...
Yes, the distinction is there is no mechanism by which Mr. Robinson or Midnight Dreams agreed to pay her anything for any services rendered to anybody at any time under any circumstances. So the question for this court is whether, and it seems to me there are no cases cited by the plaintiff that talk about this lease. Now, I agree that in the legal world out there, how dancers work at strip clubs in Vegas and Minneapolis and Wisconsin that have food, that have alcohol, that have an environment in which the lady is dancing over in the corner, that's been a struggle for years There's hundreds of cases that deal with that, but there's not one case in which somebody like Mr. Robinson said, I'm not doing any of that. I'm not selling food. I don't have a liquor license. You can dance fully nude here, and you can convince these gentlemen here to part with their money by doing so. I provide the place. I provide the place for the male to meet with and be entertained by the dancer, and for the dancer to come if and when she wants, under whatever circumstance she wants, and make however much she wants. And that's an attractive model for everyone in the industry, apparently, but the plaintiff in this case, who now, on top of her $44 an hour, was awarded minimum wage, overtime, and $28,000 in attorney's fees to get it. We believe the underlying argument that this was an employment contract, or that lease can be converted into an employment or an independent contractor agreement, which then can be converted into an employment agreement, which then is subject to the wage and hour laws, is simply clearly wrong and not supported by sufficient evidence. And it violates the fundamental right of the parties to contract. And in this particular case, that's the agreement they made.
What if she didn't make $44 an hour, but made $1 an hour in tips?
I don't think she'd be traveling from Wisconsin and taking Mr. Robinson up on the lease agreement. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Neary, good morning to you.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Hevigan, members of the court, it is a privilege to be here today to defend the finest wage and hour order in the United States. The opinion is thoroughly analyzed, demonstrates a proper application of the law to the facts, and as I understand, it's currently being taught at the University of Nebraska Law School. In light of the fact that the defendant or the appellants didn't file a reply brief, it appears that they aren't contesting the facts or the law or the application of the facts to the law in this matter as we set forth in our opposing brief. Appellee's defense of Judge Strong's order goes uncontested since there is an absence of a reply brief in this case. Now, while the appellants strongly allege and wrongly allege that the standard of review on this matter is de novo, Nebraska law dictates that the proper appellate review in a bench trial in an action at law is clearly erroneous. That's our standard on review. There was no error in Judge Strong's order. Now, what Mr. Krieger didn't say today, he wants to talk a lot about the lease agreement, but he failed to tell to the court that there were 50 terms and conditions that Ms. Mays was subjected to the minute she walked into the establishment. He forgot to tell you that she is required to clean bathrooms. He forgot to tell you, as you questioned, Judge Stacy, that yes, she had to schedule in advance and she had to work 2 weekday nights a week if she wanted to dance there on the weekends. Yes, he controlled every single term and condition of her employment. She had to wear high heels. She had to be nude, naked, by the third song. They picked their songs. She was required to tip the bartenders. There was rules posted by Robinson, also by his employees, where she had to keep her body parts a certain distance away from the customers. 50 posted. These weren't something I'm making up. These were posted and they were enforced in the establishment that there were repercussions in the record that was testified to, that the dancers were threatened, they were harassed if they didn't abide by the rules. Period.
Counsel, if we were to follow your argument that this is an employment agreement, then what's the applicable law? Is it federal? Is it state law?
Yeah, I think it's simpler than that, Aaron. I'm just going to bring it down to the basic. Yeah, there's a written lease agreement, four corners of the document. We're not disputing that. That lease agreement required her to pay money to him, right? So any equitable estoppel argument is a ridiculous argument. But this is a red herring.
I think maybe you misunderstood my question. If we follow your train and say that this is an employment agreement, she is an employee.
Yeah, that's
is that what you're asking?
That's not my argument, Your Honor. The lease agreement is a lease agreement. But once she walked into the door of Shakers, by the enforcement and establishment of those 50 rules, he made her an employee.
Okay, I'm with you so far, but right. My question then is, if we determine she's an employee, what's the applicable law? Is it state law? Is it federal law? How do we determine damages? Things of that nature.
Well, I don't think, Your Honor, and when I answer the question, but what we're here on just payment of wage and hour under the FLSA.
That's what I'm asking. How
right.
Is it
we're
FLSA?
Here just, we're how, not here on a Title VII case.
How is it FLSA?
How is it FLSA?
That's what I'm asking.
When she walked into the facility, she was required to clean bathrooms every night. Certain kind of lotion she had to use. She had to wear high heels.
Nebraska, is FLSA a Nebraska law or
no.
Is it federal?
It's a federal law, Your Honor.
How are we under federal law? That's my question.
Because the FLSA has a very broad definition of employer.
And
it doesn't have to be somebody, you don't have to wear a tag saying I'm an employer.
You have
it
to be
looks
involved
at the,
in interstate commerce?
Your Honor, I believe so.
Okay.
But there was testimony also that she traveled and many of the dancers traveled from out of state.
So is that sufficient to make that interstate commerce? Coming from Wisconsin to Nebraska to perform this job?
But not just her, others, and so yes.
Well, she's the only plaintiff.
Right.
Correct?
But
this
there was...
Class,
yes, sure.
This is a class action lawsuit.
Correct.
So how is Ms. Mays traveling from Wisconsin to Nebraska make this a federal case?
Because when she had to call and schedule her time to dance, she was calling Dan Robinson and scheduling it. And by her traveling from there to Nebraska and him contracting with her through her services, that makes it an FLSA.
So because she lives in Wisconsin and calls Nebraska.
No, that he is scheduling her to dance at his facility where he earns money and contracting dancers to come in from out of state.
That makes it interstate commerce.
We would submit it.
Was that issue brought up before the trial court?
It was not.
I'm back to my question. Was there a challenge to the jurisdictional basis of this case?
There was not, Your Honor. But even if the court would say that active contracting to have dancers appear at his facility so he can make money under the FLSA, if you would find that there's not sufficient interstate commerce, under the Nebraska Wage and Hour Act, clearly there's jurisdiction.
Aren't there damages difference, though, between Nebraska and federal law?
The only damage difference, Your Honor, is both allow for the minimum wage to be paid. There is no overtime under state law. And under federal law, there is a presumption, unless there's good faith shown by the defendant, that there's a presumption of liquidated damages. So
liquidated damages. And in addition to tip and tip wages, is that correct? If you receive tips under Nebraska law, there may be a difference?
The FLSA speaks to when you want to take a tip credit, you have to post wage and hour laws, that's the employer's burden, and you have to notify the dancers that you intend to do so. He didn't either.
Is that required under Nebraska law?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
You talked about Judge Strong's order. Did any of the cases that she cited in her order deal with this situation where your client was paying money to work at this establishment? Or is this a case of first impression?
Well, in Nebraska, it's a case of first impression.
Sure.
But a lot of the cases, and you'll see pages of cases we cite, that it is not unusual that the dancers pay the facility owner to dance there. The facts are very similar, the instant facts in this case are very similar to other facts around the nation. She specifically talked about a Fourth Circuit case, nearly identical facts here. But the fact that she made $44 an hour in tips is irrelevant to the minimum wage because wages have to be paid by the employer. Robinson can't take credit for $44 in tips per hour when he's not making the payment. In fact, she is paying him to dance. So let's not make sure we confuse that. Thank you. Is there any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is...